Welcome to another episode of the CBA's ABC's of Bow Hunting. I am here with CJ Sefcovic. Did I say that right, CJ?
Yeah, Sefcovic. Yep.
Sefcovic. Where's that from?
It's Czech. Yeah.
Czech. Wow. Is there any hunting in the Czech Republic? Do you know of?
I don't know. There's a bunch of people in my family that hunt, so I don't know. Maybe there is, maybe there's not.
Yeah, I just got back from Guatemala, and anytime I travel, I'm always so curious about, like, what are their species? Is there any hunting? Is the country structured well enough where hunting is, like, allowed and legal?
Exactly.
And they have some interesting deer down there, but I don't think hunting is too popular. It just makes me very grateful for the system that we do have here and how it all works. And the fact that there's people out there like you and the CBA and just in general that are, like, you know, trying to be good spokesman for it, hold it all together and participate in our nature and our wildlife.
Exactly. It's special. We're blessed to live here in the U.S. where we have the system that we do.
It's really incredible because, not to take this all down a political rabbit hole, but I'm from many worlds. I'm from New York. I live here in Colorado. I do yoga. I hunt. I'm kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
And when you hear people kind of poo-pooing on America, there's things that don't deserve credit, right? There's some high-level corruption. A lot of corporations get a lot of what they want. The people don't. But in general, like, it is an amazing place to live, especially with our public lands, our access to wildlife, and just the ability to go out and, like, have the freedom of movement that we do across these, you know, thousands of miles coast to coast. It's just, I'm in a little bit of a reflective mode, but I'm very grateful to be here.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I've never been to Europe, or, you know, and so I'm not familiar firsthand with, you know, how things are in a lot of areas of the globe. But, you know, I did get a wildlife biology degree from CSU. So I am sort of familiar with how the system works, you know, in other places. And we are super blessed to have the system of wildlife management that we have here. So
100%. It's one of the few things I talk about with people. I'm like, listen, the federal government doesn't do a ton right, but the North American model of wildlife conservation is pretty rock solid.
Yep.
You know, there's stuff to improve, but I do think,
yeah,
as, like, an entity with the money that goes into it from Pittman Robertson and Dingell Johnson,
yep,
and all these other resources, it's just like, man, I wish other things worked this smoothly or this well.
Exactly.
That being said, there's still a lot to fight for and protect. And, you know, thank God for people like HAL for Wildlife and all those other kind of organizations that are putting our voices together as one to have a louder, a bigger seat at the table, if you will.
Exactly.
So instead of me just pontificating about why I like America and hunting, I want to get to know you a little bit. Why don't you give me a little bit of history? Are you from Colorado? Did you end up in Colorado? How did you find Colorado?
Yeah, so I'm from Southern Colorado originally, a little town called Pueblo. Many people have passed through there, but not really spent a ton of time there. Grew up, you know, waterfowl hunting for the most part. You know, we have the Arkansas Valley that runs through there and the Arkansas River. So, you know, that system holds a lot of waterfowl, a lot of turkeys, all that good stuff. So that's kind of what I grew up doing. I grew up down in Southern Colorado. Went the first, you know, hunting the first time when I was 4 years old, just kind of tagged along with my dad and,
whoa,
and, you know, went a lot with my uncle and cousin. It was kind of a family outing. And, that's kind of where I started in the hunting, space. And, you know, I just, you know, the first time, my dad always tells a story, we went waterfowl hunting, you know, it was negative temperatures, a blizzard, and we didn't get a thing that day. And I cried when I had to go home. So that was his story of how it was always in the blood from the start. And, I don't know, I was kind of just gone down a rabbit hole, since then.
I love that. Did any of your family do archery, or was it all shotgun and rifle stuff?
So I will say I'm the first bow hunter in my family, which I think is cool. You know, I obviously grew up waterfowl hunting, shotguns, got into turkey hunting. That one-on-one interaction turkey hunting was something special, but I was always nudged by some good friends of mine to get into bow hunting. And for me, I kind of resisted it for a while just because it was another hobby, right? Took more time out of the schedule when I was already going pretty, you know, hardcore into the waterfowl and turkey and upland thing. But eventually they broke me down and I got a bow, and there's nothing, I will say, I've done a lot of different hunting and there's nothing quite like bow hunting. So I'm happy.
Oh man, that's so cool. I've said this on a bunch of podcasts, so I won't spend too much time on it, but I don't have any family that hunts, and I'm from Long Island, New York, which is a bow only unit. And so my hand was kind of forced to start in that world. And it's just so fascinating to meet people who have vast hunting histories or very little hunting histories, or listen to Joe Rogan or Cam Haynes or whoever it was. Yeah. But there is something different, something intimate about archery, whether it's compound or traditional, that, you know, it's almost cliche, but with a rifle, the hunt almost ends when the archery hunt begins, depending on how far you could get. What was that first bow? How did you even come across, how'd you make that decision to step into that world?
So some of my good friends, you know, I don't know, Thomas and Thomas Deesting, they own Mile High No Game Calls. So it's an outcall company. And basically 2018, when I made the decision to kind of plunge into bow hunting, I decided I was going to shadow them for a year, kind of go along with them on their hunts and see if it was something that I wanted to do. You know, about the same time I bought a bow, and I, you know, I loved shooting the bow. You know, I loved going after work and just getting reps in. It was just super relaxing, just to kind of a form of meditation almost. Just loved shooting the bow. So that first season when I tagged along with them, you know, calling in a, you know, Tom Sr. called in a bull 20 yards. Thomas, we got into a whole herd of elk, a bull and a couple of cows came in. And just the interaction with an animal that big, something that's so challenging to do in that country, just, it wasn't quite like anything I had experienced. You know, people kind of equivalent turkey hunting to elk hunting in a lot of ways, just because of the interaction. But once you actually get up there and you are, you know, spend 2 or 3 or 4 days in the terrain and, you know, put miles on, and there's so many factors going into it with the wind and scent, and you finally get that close, you know, that close encounter with a bull or a cow, it's just something that's just different, you know. And and obviously just being up in the mountains in the fall time, there's no other place, you know, that I'd rather be personally. It's just a great time of year to be up there. So after that first season in 2018, when I kind of shadowed them, I knew it was something that I wanted to dive into 100%. And that's one of the reasons I kind of just kind of resisting it in the bow hunting, because I knew that when I went down that rabbit hole, I would go in 110%. And so the next year, 2019, I brought a bow into the woods and kind of started the journey officially.
Man, that is so awesome. I'm curious, as a person who's had, sorry, how old are you?
I'm 32 years old.
32. I'm 33. So we're kind of in the same boat. So as a person, for you, since 4 years old, who's had, let's say, 20 plus years of hunting experience, education, mentors, people, I'm curious how that positively and how that negatively impacted your foray into bow hunting, because it's such a different thing. And I'm similar. I picked up a bow in 2017. I took a white-tailed doe in Long Island. I moved out here in 2019. I took my first elk last year solo with a bow, and I took one with a rifle.
Congrats.
And so, thanks, man. It's there is no feeling like it, like on earth, just in terms of the amount of effort you put in to capitalize on an opportunity that you created or invited or whatever. There's just so much that has to go right for it to go right, that like it's an overwhelming amount of emotion when you're like, I did this. I just made that happen. It's crazy. But I'm curious, what parts of hunting from your hunting history were helpful in terms of maybe glassing, spotting game, knowing what animals do, and what parts were hurting in terms of maybe the stealth or the stalking or the different approach that you need to take with bow hunting?
You know, I think I'm a big believer that, you know, skills in hunting in general, a lot of those skills, just like with any job, are transferable. And, you know, a lot of the skills you learn waterfowl hunting or turkey hunting, in different senses, they can be applied to, you know, whatever type of hunting that you're doing. You know, I saw a lot of correlation between, you know, turkey hunting and elk hunting, especially when it came to calling and getting in position and looking at the topography and kind of just observing what wildlife do at different times of the day. You know, those skills that you observe just growing up, you know, when you're patterning elk in the fall and all summer long with trail cams, you can kind of do the same. I mean, those skills that you learn in those other forms of hunting are transferable to the elk woods. And so that's what I've, you know, so I think that, you know, growing up doing those other forms of hunting definitely aided me in my transition to bow hunting. You know, as far as being, you know, I was always supported by my family. You know, my family, you know, we do have a rifle camp every fall, and there's 12 to 15 guys that go up there, and the whole family, they rifle hunt. So
elk, you know, deer,
Yeah, here in Colorado.
Sorry, was that elk or was that deer or both?
Elk. Yep.
Nice.
Elk hunt. Yep. So I mean, that was kind of the family tradition. When I was young, I'd see my dad leave for the week. And, you know, sometimes he'd get something. Most of the time he didn't get anything, but he'd come back. But that was kind of what you did in our family. You know, you went up to rifle camp. And other than that, you went pheasant hunting or waterfowl hunting. But I wanted to, you know, I loved just being in the woods, and I love what I learned through turkey hunting and all those experiences. And growing up, the main reason why I didn't big game hunt as much was simply because of I was really involved in sports, football. I had school, I had college, I had finals. So after I graduated college, I made a decision. Okay, like this is something I've always wanted to do. This is an itch I've always wanted to scratch. So I kind of dove into it. I went to rifle camp for a few years, killed my first bull at rifle camp. And then nice. Years later, got into the bow hunting thing kind of all in. So
that's so awesome, man. Do you feel like there's anything that you picked up from rifle hunting that made the learning curve in bow hunting more difficult or just a new challenge of like closing the distance, as we say?
Yeah, I mean, I think any form of hunting, you know, just a high level of consistency is important. And I think obviously rifle hunting teaches you consistency. There's only so much that you can do. Although I will say since I started bow hunting that I've brought a whole new dimension to our rifle camp as far as being able to call elk in and the whole interaction. But, you know, yeah, I think that, you know, just using and learning the topography with elk specifically is huge. Knowing how elk pattern, where they bed, what time of day they bed, how the moon phases are affecting them. Those are all things that you learn rifle hunting that you can apply to bow hunting. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely skills along the way that I kind of picked up through rifle hunting, but I will say that I would, you know, the majority of the skill set that I've learned in the elk woods has come just from trial and error, being out there in the woods, you know. And I like to hunt solo a lot, and there's a reason that I do that. And that's just, you know, if I make a mistake, I can blame myself and learn from that mistake. And so I think, you know, obviously there's things that I picked up along the way, but a lot of it has come down to just being out there, making mistakes and learning from them.
Yeah, I love that. And it's amazing how much you can absorb through YouTube and podcast and all of these people out there. However, maybe one day or one week in the woods is like a lifetime of education when it comes to what to do and definitely what not to do.
Exactly.
Especially when, for me, I love opening day because it's very different than every other day of the season. They'll just aren't expecting you to be there. And so it's just like you get one moment. There's only one opening morning. Yeah. That's it. And so like this year I was able to get one on opening day. It was the afternoon, but it was just so fascinating to be like from the year prior to be like, I'm thinking about this moment almost every moment of the day, 365, just to have that opportunity again.
That's awesome.
It's addicting, man.
Yeah, it is addicting.
You had the opportunity to hunt various units for elk specifically in Colorado, or do you typically stick to a consistent spot? You don't have to be too specific.
Yeah, so as far as the unit that I go to, you know, I originally started going with, like I mentioned, my good buddies, Tom and Thomas. And, you know, for them, it was like, we have this area that we go to, you know, we have these areas we like to hunt within that unit. You know, we want you to be up there. We want you to be a part of our camp, but you're going to need to find your own spots.
Yeah.
So, 100%. You know, I spent the majority of the summer between 2018, 2019, scouting, e-scouting, putting trail cameras up. You know, I spent a ton of time that summer just kind of finding my own areas. So I think finally by this point in, you know, I'm at that point to where I really know the areas that I hunt very well. To where I've been reluctant to almost try different units in different areas just because I'm so comfortable with, you know, with my strategies and the terrain and how, you know, how the elk pattern. So long story short, I have not hunted any other units. Since 2019, my first year of bow hunting, I've harvested five elk with a bow.
Wow.
The last two seasons, I've doubled up on a cow and a bull. And you know, the unit we hunt is it's an over the counter public unit, so anybody can go up there, and it is heavily hunted. But I've just found these little honey holes that nobody thinks to really hunt, and just been consistent. Yep. So, you know, it's I've taken these years and just try to really hone in on the unit specific and the area specifically where I hunt. And I haven't really ventured out. I will say that one of the main reasons I got into bow hunting was to be able to go bow hunting where my family rifle hunts. So
nice.
I've been saving up points for that unit. And I think when the stars align, I'll be able to pull that tag and kind of be the first person to take a bow where my family's rifle hunted for 30 years. So that'll be cool.
Wow. That is really cool. I want to get back to that point because that's really interesting. Just the idea of rifle season is a month or 2 months later than archery season. So to be in there way earlier, especially if it's a limited unit, that's going to be a wild experience.
Yeah.
If the elk are there, right? Sometimes the elk aren't there on September 1st and they are there on exactly. October 15th.
Yeah.
But I asked about that because you were mentioning like learning the elk, learning patterning them, learning their behavior, learning the mountains, thermals, your own personal abilities, your energy levels, what you will and will not be able to accomplish. But I do find that Colorado, and I don't hunt elk in other states yet, but Colorado, we have so many elk, right? 250,000 elk here. And we have so much, so many different climates, so many different terrains. You can hunt elk at 12,000 feet. You can hunt elk at 7,000 feet. You can hunt elk in the foothills. You can hunt elk in the mountains. And so I feel like each of those herds have their own thing to them as well, like their own specific patterns of behavior, timing. I was calling in elk on September 2nd last year, and they were rutted up and in a herd where last year, the exact same date and time, they were in bachelor groups in the same location. Mm-hmm. So that whole patterning thing, it's like you need to know as much information as you possibly can to still get lucky, to like still have that lucky moment.
Yeah.
And you know, it's kind of cliche, but that thing is luck is when opportunity meets preparation. And that's really what it is. Okay, I'm confident in my equipment. I know how this bow is going to work. And so let me make sure that's all, you know, second nature, so that when this thing does walk across me and I'm scared out of my mind or just energized, the execution goes well.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you bow hunt other things as well, like deer, pronghorn? Pueblo's got a ton of pronghorn around it.
I haven't bow hunted. I've basically bow hunted turkeys. I've killed several turkeys with my bow, and really, you know, everything else I've been kind of just, you know, getting saving points for. I did shoot a mule deer this year as well.
Nice.
That was a rifle tag on some private land west of Loveland here. I mean, all those things are on the list. I'd really like to do spot stock bow hunting up in Nebraska this coming season. So yeah, a lot of those things are coming on the list. You know, to be honest with you, I've just kind of dove into the elk thing the last 3 or 4 years and just trying to master that. Not that it will ever be mastered, but trying to hone my skill sets on that. And then, you know, using those skills to try to transfer into different types of bow hunting.
Did you find that after that first elk bow kill that you had a new level of confidence approaching bow hunting situations in general?
I think so. You know, I think that, you know, it's like you mentioned earlier in the podcast, the unique thing with bow hunting is the hunt really starts once you've released that arrow. And and that was the hardest thing that I think that I had, you know, as far as being a hunter in general is, you know, you go waterfowl, you go hunt turkey hunting, go rifle hunting. You can see that animal die, that animal go down in many instances. So you feel that level of comfort, like you made a good shot, an ethical shot. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of time when an elk presents itself with a bow, like you might feel confident in your shot. But when you let that 30, 40 minutes, hour go by and you go look for blood, and you don't see any, it adds a whole new layer of, you know, it can, your confidence can be 90% and go down to 10% really quickly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I will say that, you know, with every experience, every encounter, every arrow that I've released on an animal, I have developed more and more confidence, not just in the shot, but in the, you know, the situational awareness, but in the tracking. Because, you know, it's all well and good to put an arrow in an animal, but if you don't have the patience or the skill set to track that animal and it runs 300 or 400 yards in dark timber, you know, a lot of guys will give up and they won't see it out. So I think that, yes, I think since that first one, you know, in all, I will be 100% transparent. My buddy Thomas helped me track that first bull. He's actually the one that found it because there was no blood trail.
Yeah.
And it was nerve wracking. But yeah, I think that every year, every encounter that goes by, I think my confidence has definitely increased.
it's an interesting thing, because I felt that too, like even going into rifle one last year after getting the bull, I just felt like I've done this.
Yeah.
I know how to do this, and I'm like confident in my skill set and being out here. And it's 40 degrees, not 95 degrees. So I can let this thing lay down for a little bit.
Exactly.
I had the same thing. My bull on September 2nd, I shot him in the afternoon. I was on the border of public and private. I searched everywhere I could legally, called CPW, got in contact with the landowner, got permission to search private, didn't find him that day. The next morning, they're like, hey, we got hunters coming through. Like, we need you out of there. And I was like, I need another hour.
Yeah.
And I ended up finding him, zero blood, pure grid searching. And it was 100 yards from where I shot it.
Wow.
In a very logical area. Like, it followed the game trail that I saw it go down. And obviously, in hindsight, you're like, oh, it was just right there. But there's just hours of, like, you go from, like, I can't believe we just did that to, like, I can't believe I just lost this thing.
Yeah,
back to, like, I can't believe I just found it. And then 3 hours later, like, I am dead tired. I'm out of water and I got to climb out of this thing with a few hundred pounds of elk. It's such a roller coaster. But I think that's, for me, a big part of the enjoyment is it's not just sending an arrow. It's not just finding out where elk are, but it's this entire process of I'm interested in this. Okay, where can I go do it? Okay, how can I go do it? And I'm kind of in your same boat about the elk unit. Like, I got one this year and I was telling Henry Ferguson, I was like, yeah, man, I want to go to a new unit and start this challenge over again. And he was like, don't. He's like, go back to that unit, get at least another elk or two from there. Maybe bring some friends in there that you want to help them get going with archery hunting. But don't just torture yourself immediately. Do some research and maybe 3 or 4 years from now, go enter into another OTC unit. Yeah. And that's kind of where I'm leaning now. But I also decided, let me pick up a bunch of whitetail stuff this year because I can still focus September on elk. And then similar to you, Nebraska, Montana, New York, and Colorado, I'll get 7 to 8 opportunities at whitetail deer. I'm not a mule deer hunter yet. I've tried it. I'll just admit out there, it is hard. It is insanely hard. And to have gas at 10,000, 11,000 feet is very different than hunting at 9,000 feet or 8,000 feet.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat. I've killed a couple mule deer now, but you know, they both went with rifle. I haven't bow hunted a mule deer. You know, Thomas drew a tag last year. Basically, he spent 22 or 23 points on that tag. But it was a fourth season rifle tag. And the mule deer, I mean, he got an incredible buck. He ended up scoring right around 211. And just an incredible hunt. And so that was, you know, as time goes on, I'm getting more and more, you know, exposed to and, you know, learning the kind of the gig with the mule deer thing. But, you know, I definitely see a future bow hunting the mule deer, you know.
Yeah,
Eastern Colorado, I mean, Nebraska, there's just some incredible bucks around.
100%. My kind of bigger or longer term hunting goal for Colorado is the Big Eight. And so that's like one that it's just like, all right, I can kind of do this in a specific process and I don't need to do it by the age of 34. That would be sick. Yeah. But if it's like, if I could get one new species every like 2 years, then that's going to be pretty awesome for me.
Exactly.
I'm curious in terms of training, both archery and like fitness, diet, nutrition, do you do anything specific to be capable in the mountains?
Yeah, I do. You know, I have a Mountain Tough hoodie on right now. I do a lot of Mountain Tough's workouts. I don't do them all religiously or as regimented as I should, but I do take a lot of the concepts and a lot of the things from those workouts and kind of apply them to my own workouts. But yeah, I mean, I think it's incredibly important to be in shape. You know, I try to get in at least an hour workout every single day, even on the weekend. If I don't feel like lifting, I'll do just a ruck or some cardio on the treadmill just to keep it going. But yeah, I found the Mountain Tough workout super beneficial and super transferable to what you do in, you know, as a mountain bow hunter. A lot of the things that you do in those workouts really does aid you to, you know, stepping over down timber, those different types of awkward situations, you know, that program is really great. So yeah, I really do try to take fitness as seriously as I can, as, you know, obviously, you know, I think all hunters kind of go through the phase in the early spring and summertime where they take it a little bit more seriously because the season's coming up quick, but yeah, I try to make it an all around thing. And, you know, I try to you know, when the spring and summer comes around, I try to get bow reps in every day as well. So we have a archery range down the road here in Windsor, and I try to make it out there every evening.
Nice, man. Yeah, I love that. I haven't tried any of the Mountain Tough stuff yet, but I've heard of it. I've looked into it a little bit, and it does look great. And I think, you know, there's a lot of modalities out there, but I think really sticking to one and starting it early is the key. Like I moved out here in 2019. From like 2019 to like 2021, I probably got like 2 times stronger. And then like 21 to 22, again, I probably doubled my strength. And last year, it's like, all right, I took 2 elk out of the woods by myself. And my brain is still like, I need to get like 10 times stronger.
Yeah.
I need to get my wind up. I need to get my endurance up. I need to like, I like the way, you know, Cameron Haynes, a little bit of a unique guy, but one thing he says is like, I don't want this to be the toughest day of my life. I want this to be the easiest day of my life. And I was like, that's a cool way to approach an elk hunt. Exactly. You know, having that internal, because there's one thing about having the confidence with the equipment. I tuned my broadheads, I fletched my own arrows, I've got this stuff dialed. But the other part is like, okay, I sent that arrow, my release went off. Do I have what it takes now to get it done? Because that's, you know, finding elk is hard, killing elk is hard, getting elk out is probably the hardest thing that I've ever had to do in my whole life.
Yeah, exactly. And you brought up, you know, you brought up Cam Haynes. You know, I really look up to Cameron Haynes in a lot of different ways. He was one of the reasons. So when I kind of got into bow hunting in 2018, 2019, you know, I watched a bunch of his videos and a bunch of his content. And obviously these things were a major part, but watching the way he went about things in the woods and the preparation, that did have a huge impact on the way I viewed elk hunting as well, you know. And just kind of going with the mindset of trying to attain the result that you're after is huge. And it's a huge mindset shift because, you know, a lot of guys, you know, a lot of people go into the woods with mentality that they're just going to go out there, have fun if they see something great. That's fine and dandy, but ultimately, you know, every day that you're in the woods, you're taking time away from other parts of your life, whether it be work, family. So I think, you know, maximizing your time in the woods is important. I think being physically fit and being able to get up the mountain, get up that ridge is super important if you really want to maximize your time.
100%. And the other thing I've learned is like a knowledge of self, because I look up to a million different people, but I look up to guys like Paul Navarre. It's in his 80s, still solo hunting. And it's like, okay, how do I do this 50 years from now? What smart decisions do I need to make today about my knees, about my diet, about my approach that leads into that longevity? Because there is something about like, I'll go into any hellhole, I'll climb any mountain, I'll do it. It's like, okay, you could do that when you're 31 or 35 or whatever, but like, you're not doing that at 45 or 50. Maybe you are, maybe some guys are. Yeah. My goal is not to kill a 400 inch bull every year. That would be sick, but I don't have 70 grand to spend on a private tag. And not that guys don't kill without that. I'm just making jokes here, but the reality is like having that personal fire of like, okay, I got a 4x5 bull this year. I don't know if I would turn down a 4x4 bull next year, but if it came across me on opening day at 7:30 a.m., there might be a piece of me. It's like, maybe we have a little time to find something else, but just that incremental. I make fun of Henry for this all the time. I don't know if you know Henry's son, Kyle, but he's killed more things than anybody else on the planet, and they're giants. And I was like, you're ruining this kid. He's not going to have anything to look forward to. We're going to have to genetically modify deer for him to get excited about. But I think it's still awesome that he has that level of exposure at such a young age. However, I realize that I need to take my wins in bite-sized chunks and not be upset that Remy Warren killed a 9x7 and I'm never going to do it. It's like, no, that's awesome. Maybe one day I'll even see one of those things. But for me, it's just like incremental. This feels a little bit better, or this is my new high watermark for what I call success.
Exactly. And I think it just takes getting some under your belt to be able to have the confidence to kind of make those new goal lines and those new benchmarks. And, you know, I have no issues. You know, my last two bulls have been raghorns, and, you know, my first bull was a decent, I mean, I still would consider it a satellite bull, but it was a 6x6 bull. My first archery bull. The last two have been one was a 4x5 and one last year was a 5x5, I believe. But yeah, I mean, I, I haven't had much, you know, resistance to being, you know, pulling the trigger on a raghorn or a smaller satellite bull, just because I'm trying to hone my skill sets. And ultimately for me, you know, bringing home quality meat, and especially, you know, in the era in which we live right now, is incredibly important. And
100%.
Being able to fill the freezer and being self-sustainable is important. Now, I did have the conversation with Thomas a few weeks ago, and I was just like, you know, I think that this year I'm going to start to kind of hold out for a, you know, a herd bull, because, you know, last year I ended up wounding a herd bull opening weekend, and I didn't get the job done on it. It was just a bad shot. It was a non-lethal shot, but I didn't sleep for a week after that.
I bet.
You know, so I felt comfortable enough, you know, with the shot and seeing, you know, the bull run back up the mountain with his cows to continue hunting that season, that bull mm-hmm. would be okay. Or else I would have stopped hunting. But, you know, I ended up killing a smaller bull later that season. But I think having that calling in a herd bull away from the cows opening weekend definitely gave me a different perspective on a kind of a new benchmark and a new goal going into next season, to where, yeah. you know, it, on day 12 or day 13, I might shoot the same bull that I did last year, but I do think that, you know, it just kind of raises your standards a little bit when you have those encounters.
100%. So with that, is your main tactic calling, or do you just kind of take what the opportunity is there? If you spot something, you'll come up with a stock plan, or if you find a honey hole, you'll sit on it. Do you have a preferred tactic you've honed over these past few years?
Yeah. So, I mean, every elk I've killed, I'll say that I've called in, you know,
that's awesome.
And, you know, I learned from some of the best callers out there, and they're not just competition callers, but they're callers that have transitioned a lot of skill sets into the woods, you know, because you can go into the woods and call like you're in a competition, but that's not going to call an elk in. So understanding realistic sounds, you know, trial and error, like I mentioned earlier, but yeah, so calling has been a huge thing for me. Obviously I like to be able to adapt in different situations. If you're calling, a herd bull is going to push his cows up the mountain to try to get away from you, or if you're letting out bugles. So, you know, there's certain situations where you're going to have to cut elk off. Spot and stalk might be a strategy that you use if you're in the right situation, but I really do lean on calling a lot, just yeah. because where we hunt specifically, it's dark timber. So spot and stalk's kind of hard to do unless you can get in, you know, to a bedding area or something like that. So we rely on calling a lot for what we do and where we hunt.
I haven't, I've hunted dark timber. I haven't taken an animal in dark timber, but it is so interesting because your setup process is very different. And that's the thing that I'm fascinated in by watching guys who hunt that dark timber, is you're trying to do this calling game where you're understanding where they are. Are you bringing them to you? Are you kind of dogging them and trying to catch up to them? But the moment you're creating, you still need a window. You still need a lane. You still need something to shoot. And that seems to be pretty tricky. Have you, do you do anything like a 3D archery events, like TAC or any of that other stuff? Has anything there kind of helped you in those situations?
I haven't done TAC. I've done a couple of the local 3D events. I'm a member of Big Thompson Bow Hunters here in Loveland, and they do some 3D shoots. I've done a couple of those. I didn't make it last summer, but I went to the CBA Jamboree summer before last. So I did that
nice.
Event. So I haven't done any fancy TAC events or anything like that. Those are all things that are on the list, time permitting. But yeah, I mean, I think 3D does certainly help, especially with those weird angles, those different, you know, topography situations. But I say this all the time, you know, you can practice all these different scenarios, but nothing's going to prepare you for that moment that bull comes in, because it's usually not the angle you predict. Usually it's not the direction you predict. Usually there's a cow in front of him, so she's going to scent you and she's going to block your shot initially. Like, there's always certain their variables. So I think just, you know, reps and being able to adapt and just time in the woods is really what prepares you to kind of anticipate what might happen in that situation.
100%. Yeah. Different question. I don't even know if it's got an appropriate answer, but I've just something I've been in my mind since I've been out hunting, especially solo hunting, because there is no camaraderie. There is no conversation. There is no even joking around. You're just by yourself in your own head. The line between instinct and intuition, and I'm trying to for me, flush this out, because I do think as human beings, we have instincts. As hunters, we develop instincts, but also there's something as a woodsman where you have an intuition about what might be happening or where the herd's going to move or how other hunters are going to affect the herd in a certain way. I'm curious how that has developed or played a role in your life, because there's a level of, once you have a few experiences, there's a library, a catalog to draw from of, okay, how could this possibly go down? I'm curious how that's changed over time, especially going from a rifle to a bow to being solo, even in those tracking moments of just do I take a left? Do I take a right? Do I stop? I know it's kind of an open-ended question, but I'm curious how your connection to the woods has changed over the time.
Yeah, well, I think it's a good question. And I think about these things too. I mean, obviously when you solo hunt for 18 days, you think about these different things. And I've thought about instinct and intuition in the woods and how that plays a part. And, for me, I think that I don't know if as far as intuition and instinct goes, I'm not sure, all hunters are created equal in that aspect. I think that some people have to spend a little bit more time honing their skill sets. And, and for me, it's been a mixture, I can't say if it's, instinct or intuition is a natural thing, but I can certainly say with 100% that it can be refined and it can be improved upon, like you said, with the catalog and experiences that you have in the woods. So, and when you do a lot of elk hunting and calling like we do, you might hear, a perfect example of this is if you call and a bull responds to you and then he shuts up, it's like, where did that bull go? And that's a huge, that's one of those perception intuition type situations where you have to think, okay, what time of day is it? Is he going back to bed? Why'd he shut up? Did he get a scent? What's really going on there? And a lot of times there's no answer to it. Obviously those catalog entries in your mind can aid you to try to make the best informed decision possible. But a lot of times you're just saying, I'm going to do the opposite of what I'm thinking, because that's usually what happens. And sometimes it pays off. So, I mean, but there are certain circumstances when you have that feeling in your gut that something might happen and you just trust it and you go and it works out. Yeah. So I don't think there's any clear answer, to it. I just think that you can certainly hone those instincts and intuition and your perception over time. But really there's no easy way to do that. Just a lot of time in the woods, I think, more than anything.
I'm 100% with you. And I think the time in the woods thing is almost like a compounding effect. So if I do some scouting, especially let's just keep it in the solo world. If I'm out there solo, let's say my first scouting attempt is early June or something like that, that it takes a little bit of time to kind of knock the rust off the rust of the city and just being back out there in that mindset. Not I snowboard a ton. So that's a completely different mindset. And the more exposure I have to that, last year, I think one thing that really helped me was doing a little pronghorn hunting before elk hunting. I didn't get one, but I was in the hunting and stalking mindset. And then being in the woods, there's just things that you start to pick up on. When I was searching for my bull, I ended up finding it the next day. And as I was kind of entering the little hellhole that I got it in, there was five ravens circling. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that's a sign that I have a dead bull down in there somewhere. And it was. And it's hard to not be like, I understand the universe. It's hard to not feel super tapped in those moments. But even further, when I was hunting in October, a rifle hunting, there was a moment where I was listening to elk call for 6 or 7 hours. And in the morning, there were, 4 or 5 right around me. It was National Geographic. It was insane. But later in the day, I just heard these distant little flutey kind of whistles. And a part of me was like, am I going crazy? Like, am I insane? But it wasn't until I returned back to Denver, sitting in my apartment, I was like, no, you, those are elk. Like, you were honed. You totally heard it. Like, you knew where they were. You knew they were far off. And it's just like your mind gets so overwhelmed with stimulus from our day-to-day lives, from our work, from our families, from our screens, that it takes a little bit of like adapting to that primal connection that we all have inside of us, right? We survived way longer as human beings that needed to have those skills than we have as human beings that need to know how to use ChatGPT or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, I on your point, you know, I would almost, because I thought about this a lot, you know, if I was 10 days into my hunt last year, when that bull came in, that herd bull came in opening weekend, would I have made a better shot? Would I have been more, would my mind been more in a state and prepared for that opportunity?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, that was the first couple of days in the hunt. So, you know, I do agree with you on 100%. I think the longer that you're in the woods, you can, all the other things kind of start to drop off one by one. And, you know, and it's interesting because I've, you know, as far as, you know, the last 3 or 4 years, I've harvested my elk, you know, on week two, week three of being up there. Usually, you know, and every year I try to go for longer just so I can kind of get more in touch with that, what you're talking about.
Last year with the bull you actually ended up recovering, was there a change at all in your shot process from the first bull to the second bull? Was there anything that you did different, whether there's a talk track or a pause or something that made you feel more confident about taking that shot?
Yeah. So the biggest thing that I took away from that shot, that I just simply rushed it. Mm. I wasn't patient enough. So that bull basically broke off his cows. He came in fully frontal. He didn't see me. He was looking down the hill right next to me. There's a little opening and he was looking for the cow where he thought I would be. But he was quartering too. So instead of waiting for him to either continue to go down a little ways where I'd get a more of a broadside shot, or waiting for him to spin and then try to stop him with the cow call, I rushed that quartering shot. And the way I was positioned, you know, it just the elevation, I was kind of down below him a little bit. I just hit him super high. I said to myself, you know, if I would have been more patient, if I would have just at least let it play out a little bit longer, you know, I might have lost the opportunity on that bull, but I wouldn't have had the gut-wrenching feeling that I did when I messed up the opportunity.
Yeah.
So I went in with the mentality the rest of the season that, you know, I'm only going to take a shot if I'm in perfect position to do that. And I'm going to honestly try to test it out a little bit to see how that patience plays out, you know? And so when that second bull came in, again, it was a very similar situation. This one was a satellite bull, came into 20 yards, fully frontal. So I didn't have a shot. My bow wasn't even drawn to be able to take a frontal shot at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a stare down for 3 or 4 minutes. And finally that bull knew something was up, spun to run away. As soon as he spun to run away, I drew back my bow, stopped him with the cow call, and he stopped 25 yards broadside.
That's huge.
Had a perfect shot, double lung. But I know that if I would have taken the patience to do that potentially on that first bull earlier in the year, that I would have been much more positioned to make a good shot. So, you know, I think that's definitely a lesson, is even if you lose an opportunity, it's worth being a little bit more patient than making a bad, you know, making a bad shot and screwing up a good opportunity.
100% with you. And it's interesting because I'm just having kind of memories of my own experience. And I feel like there's some similarities, especially the 30 or less second window that you have to make a decision. So like you scare a bull, there's a good chance it's going to stop and look back at you. And if you have a window to shoot at it, did you do what you needed to in between those two moments in time to not only have your bow, know the range, pull back, and execute a shot with patience, execute a shot with, what do they say? Slow is fast and fast is accurate, or something along those lines.
Yeah, something like that.
I had the same thing. I was at full draw on the bull, and I just remember having a moment where I saw the brown of the hide on the vitals through my peep, and I was just like, yep. Like there was just that extra moment of just like, yep. And I still shot 6 inches back. He double lunged him and he died. But at the same time, there's that thing of like, even with patience, there's so much going on is excitement with your body positioning, with what's going on. You even like practicing with a diaphragm call in your mouth so you can get used to the saliva buildup and the things that like all of those little weird nuances. Those are things that you don't want to be experiencing for the first time when you have the opportunity in front of you.
And I think, and that's incredibly important, you know, and you mentioned the positioning. And so that morning that happened was actually Monday. So it was opening weekend. It was that Monday. We were going to leave that afternoon. So I decided just to go out for a morning hunt, quick morning hunt. I was getting ready to leave the morning. It was 9:30 a.m. I was not expecting an elk to come in at this time. Like the woods were dead silent. I didn't hear a bugle all morning. I was sitting literally Indian style, just leaning up against a tree and just letting out some cow calls now and then. And I looked to my left and I saw a flash of antler coming down through the timber. So completely caught off guard just from the beginning, you know, and in that bull just, you know, it came to 15 yards frontal. It was the closest experience I've ever had with a herd bull and just an opportunity that I was not really positioned or prepared for mentally. And I just simply rushed it and tried to make something happen. And I could have made something happen, but it would have been luck. And, you know, so even just telling that story to the, you know, the guys that are in hunting camp, they're like, well, that's, you know, if we're going to go out there and we start calling, we're going to be in position. And most times we're going to be standing up or on our knees ready to go back, because you just never know when something's going to happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's when you least expect it. So
it's funny because I feel like we could keep talking about this one specific thing for the whole hour, and I want to, but there's a few other things I want to get to. The last thing I'll relate to is my 2021 on opening day, I had 18 encounters with elk, and I was at full draw twice. And what I learned from, and I never pulled the trigger and never shot, got a bull. I actually ended up calling in a bull in the exact same location that I got one this year that I did last year, had him, I was at full draw, 55 yards, but my rangefinder was saying 25, 55, 75. 20, and I was just like, I can't pull the trigger right now. But to your point, on opening day, those 18 different encounters, I would cow call, and then I didn't care if I had an either six tag. I would kill a legal spike. I would have killed a cow, and a cow would run up on me and I'm sipping my coffee, or a cow would run up on me and my bow is 5 feet away. And I'm like, if you're going to be in the game, be in the game. Like you're not going to be at the free throw line and your shoes are untied. Like you're going to be ready to go. Mm-hmm. And so that was one thing that took a whole year to be like, okay, be serious about this. And there's one thing that I took from whitetail hunting that I really love. John Dudley is like whitetail master. Mm-hmm. And he talks about like, if you're going to rattle, you better have your bow in your hands within like 5 to 10 seconds. Like there's just no excuse to not. And it's the same thing. If you're going to make a noise that draws an animal towards you, you better be ready to have that experience.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to have that potential in this next upcoming season, but it's just such an interesting thing of like, you just have to, that's where the fatigue comes in, both with sitting in a tree stand and being out for hours a day. It's like, I have to be ready the whole time. I'm not just walking through the woods or going on a hike or taking a nap. It's like, I am ready. I've bumped more elk than I can count. Like if I just move a little slower, there's more potential opportunities that would be there.
Exactly.
Speaking of the future, I'm curious what you got that you're looking forward to in 2023. You mentioned a little bit about Nebraska. You mentioned that you got some elk stuff going on. You're saving some points. I'm curious what this upcoming season, at least what you hope it looks like.
Yeah, so I'm basically going to do my same song and dance this year as far as elk goes. I'm going to go back to the same unit. Timing didn't really align with what a couple of the other guys are doing this season to do my family's unit. And that's really what I've been looking forward to for a while now. I finally have enough points to draw that unit, but I think we're just going to do the same in song and dance this year, potentially go there next year. So I'm going to do the same thing with elk. Just been putting in points for deer. Definitely going to do some Nebraska bow hunting. I have some places out there that I turkey hunt in the spring and have permission on, and even just public land out there. I'm just going to try the spot stock thing. And what's nice is you have a little bit more time out there to do that than just a week long. So I think, you know, that's something that's definitely on the list this year. With Mile High Note, I help them out and we do a lot of different shows. We went to the Hunt Expo in Utah and the ISC show in Denver. And one thing that I've always kind of been on the bucket list is a legit, you know, bear hunt. I did harvest a bear last year with my rifle.
All that.
But, I've always wanted to do a legit bow hunt for a bear up in Canada or somewhere like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
talk to a few guys brown about bear? That.
What's that?
A grizzly?
Those would be black bears.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Those would be black bears. But you know, I will say like, if we're zooming out future, that's kind of my capstone hunt. That's what I want to do as far as my capstone hunt is a grizzly bear hunt with my bow at some point.
Wow.
Hopefully within the next 10 years. I feel like if I can do that hunt legit with a bow, there's not one other hunt on the planet that I can't do. So
I like that mentality.
I just love bears. I love bear hunting. And it's just, that's definitely something that's on the list.
That's so cool. I saw that you tagged along on a friend's moose hunt. Was that a Colorado moose?
Yeah. So that's Thomas Diesing. I've mentioned him several times on this podcast, but yeah, he drew that tag 2 years ago. His dad drew the bighorn sheep tag the same year. So it was a busy fall for all of us. Whoa. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Killed an incredible Colorado moose. And I think it ended up scoring 184, something
that's
like that.
That's insane for a Shiras.
Yeah. So just an amazing, a huge Shiras. And then his dad killed a great bull and up in the Big Thompson Canyon here west of Loveland in, you know, archery season. So it was a busy fall. They weren't up there elk hunting. So I did hunt solo elk that year just because they were kind of scouting for moose and whatnot. But yeah, so went along on that and hopefully, you know, I'll be drawing those tags here soon. I started putting in a little bit later than those guys, so maybe I'll get lucky.
Yeah, I'm a little torn on it. Like I'm always putting in for goat, sheep, moose every year, just trying to get points. But there's a part of me of like, do I go for the cow moose tag and just try to hunt moose a couple of times in my life? Do I wait till I have 15 points and I'm 45 and I could take all of September off to go do this thing? Because the thing that's funny about moose is success is like nearly 100% because guys take it so seriously. I don't think it's because it's easier. It's just because I waited forever for this one.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that would be my apex hunt. Like I would love to take a sheep one day. I'd love to take a mountain goat one day, but there's just something about the size of a moose and the experience with that. I've had a few like really intimate moose encounters, non-hunting, just like out camping. And there's just this like, they're magical freaking things. Elk are insane, but there's 250,000 elk. There's not 250,000 moose in Colorado.
Yeah, it's an incredible story. We could go on like for another hour about just that story in itself, but he drew that tag in an area where the fires went through pretty significantly. So the DOW actually reissued his tag for the next year and refunded him for that year and transferred that tag to the next year. So he had scouted and had that, his eye on that moose for 2 years.
Wow. That's dedication. That's really cool. Yeah. I want to be respectful of your time, but I do have a couple of other questions I want to get to. Now that you've been hunting for, I guess, bow hunting for 5 years, 4 years. I'm curious what, if anything, you wish you knew or told yourself when you were getting into it about bow hunting, about the approach, about archery, about any of it. Or are you happy that you're learning at the rate that you're learning and having the experiences that you're having?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I think that you just have to go with, I mean, you just have to go in with the mindset that you're going to have to overcome a lot of obstacles. There's going to be a lot of learning curves in it. And, you know, guys, you know, I think the success rate in Colorado for OTC bow hunting in general, I think it's right around 5% for elk. So it's not a very super, you know, it's not a successful hunt in most cases. And I just think it's important for people to go in with the right expectation that it might not happen the first year. But I think that it's also important to realize that you have to put in a certain amount of work and a certain amount of time to be successful. And, so, I mean, I think obviously from the beginning, I kind of went in with that mindset, and obviously I'm learning every season. I'm learning with every encounter, but, you know, someone that's just getting into bow hunting, that's the biggest thing that I would, you know, kind of just, offer as advice is don't be afraid to hunt solo, learn from your mistakes, and, just get out there and just devote as much time in the woods as possible. Cause that's what's going to translate. And that's what's going to compound to more success in the future.
Yeah. I love that. And to kind of piggyback on that, cause you do have to have the right expectation and you have to do the right amount of legwork to even be in the pool, in the running to make this mm-hmm. thing happen. But the other side of that is you have to believe that it's possible. Like mm-hmm. you said, there's a lot of, I think a lot of the guys that aren't successful don't care as much, and not to knock them. I love hunters. I want hunters to exist. I want to see them out there. But last year on rifle, the second or third day of first rifle, I was at this trailhead that I was hunting at. I had already gotten one and was taking loads out. And there's a guy walking out the trailhead at like 8:30 in the morning, bitching and moaning. And I'm like, dude, you should be 4 miles that way 5 hours ago. Like, you're bitching and moaning at the trailhead when I hear rifles going off right now. So there's just a level of like, you have to have this mindset of I'm going to do this thing and it is plausible. It's almost cocky to like come to a trailhead with coolers full of ice. But at the same time, it's like, that's what I'm here for. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go kill an elk.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of guys, you know, like I mentioned earlier, like you just mentioned, a lot of guys going with the expectation that if I harvest something, great, but I'm really here just for the experience. And which is, I think that's important, right? Camaraderie is important with the family. The experience as a whole is important. But for me, that's an icing on the cake. Whereas I'm there to accomplish a mission and bring home meat. That's what I'm taking time off to do. So I think you just have to go with that right mindset, almost an expectation of success. And obviously you're going to come up short. You have to prepare yourself for that. But I think being results oriented and having that expectation just helps you, like you said, with confidence in the woods.
Yeah, for sure. I'm curious if you've had any situations that you were like, in hindsight, like, oh man, I'm glad I got out of that one, or I'm never going to put myself in that situation again. Like anything sketchy that's happened, whether it was rifle or bow or with a friend, or just a situation where you're like, I found my limit and I'm gonna change my ways.
Yeah. So last year, you know, you mentioned the cocky thing a little bit. Like last year, so I had at this point, I had harvested, you know, 4 elk with a bow. And when I found my bull last year, it was an evening hunt. And I think mm-hmm. as bow hunters, you always have that, you know, that trepidation. I mean, I always encourage hunters to go out morning and evening. Don't miss a hunt. Be out there. Sure. You just never know. But I think it's always in the back of bow hunter's mind, you know, if you release that arrow, you know, 30 minutes before dark, what's going to happen next? mm-hmm. And that kind of happened to me last year. It was a evening hunt. It was raining out, went out with my full rain gear on, just kind of set up. As soon as I got, basically, as soon as I got in a position, let out a call, a bull responded. And that it wasn't the bull that I ended up killing, but it was a satellite bull off of that herd. Mm-hmm. And, long story short, I ended up basically shooting that bull. It was right around, I think it was, you know, 6-ish in the evening. So it was pretty close to being dark. And I certainly did not wait long enough to track that bull as I should have, or I would have normally. But with the rain, with the dark setting in, I kind of did rush it a little bit. Ended up finding that bull right when it was about to turn blackout. So I was mm-hmm. thankful for that. But a couple things happened there. As soon as I found the bull, you know, I in-reached my buddy Thomas up there and let him know where at least I was, the general area that I was in.
Yeah.
He was kind of hunting in the same region, but he was still about 3 or 4 miles away as a crow flies. So he was gonna, get off the mountain, go back to camp, come back with a couple pack frames and help. Well, what I didn't realize is that at that time, my phone was at about 15%. And obviously I'd been using Onyx. I didn't charge it all day. Like I was just, I didn't have much expectation that evening with the weather and everything. And it was just a quick hunt. And of course that was the evening that I got a bull down. So, you know, as soon as it got dark, the weather intensified, it started to sleet. It was sleeting, snowing, rain mix. And it was just, so all my equipment's wet. It's all scattered everywhere. I'm trying to start on this elk and quarter it myself. And obviously in the rain and weather, everything's 10 times more difficult.
Sure.
In the dark, everything's 10 times more difficult. So I had my headlamp on. So I'm watching my phone and I'm like, Thomas is in reach of me. So every time I get an in reach, it feels like my battery percentage is going down 1% every time. So I'm in reached him like, okay, I'm at 11%. Like I need to put my phone away. So I put my phone away. And just about that time, my headlamp died.
Wow.
So I had no light at all. I had completely spaced putting batteries in my pack or carrying an extra headlamp. And my phone was at that time, 10 or 11%. And I told myself, okay, if it gets down to 5%, I'm just going to have to use my phone flashlight, my Onyx, and get off the mountain and then come back in the morning. Luckily, you know, he knew kind of generally where I was, but it was literally probably 2 hours before he got to me. I was basically sitting in the dark over my carcass waiting for him for about 45 minutes to an hour.
Gosh, and good thing we don't live in grizzly country.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, all those thoughts go through your mind. I mean, not super worried about predators, but there are mountain lions. I mean, there's things out there that, you know, that you think about, but that was super sketchy. You know, something I learned that if Thomas didn't know where I was generally, I might have been in a position where I'd had to stay there because I didn't feel comfortable trying to get out of there without light. So, you know, that's definitely you just learn those things. You just can never be caught off guard in those situations, even if you have a headlamp, bringing extra batteries, bringing an extra headlamp in general, making sure your phone, your equipment is fully charged. All those things just make a difference, especially when you have your guard down a little bit.
100%. I really appreciate that. I had Giannis Patelis from Mediator on a few weeks back, and he said, there's nothing worse than owning all of the best gear in the world and not having it with you.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just something that, you know, it's frustrating and it's obviously, it's not a proud moment, but you know, you pride yourself on being as prepared as possible. And then when you drop the ball, you're like, crap. Well, didn't think about that one, but.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that's really resonated with me with hunting is like, there's a little bit of a military mindset in there, which is like two is one is none. Like there's this level of redundancy, this level of preparedness, and the analyzation of every potential situation you could get in. Cause like, of course, I'm going to shoot an elk at about 7 a.m. on opening day, and it's going to be unusually cool for September. So this will be easy. He'll die in the shade. No problem. Versus like, I, you know, shot at last light and I am 2 miles from my camp and my buddies don't know where I am and my phone's dying and my headlamp's dying. And I don't know if this elk is dead yet or if I need to get the guts out of it. Or it's just like, you can think about how awesome it could go, but I think it's really behooves us to spend a lot of time of like, what is the worst possible situation I could get in right now? And how prepared do I need to be for that? Like, I'm not going into the mountains with mountaineering equipment, right? I'm not taking a climbing helmet and ropes, at least not yet. Yeah. But at the same time, it's just like, there's levels to, okay, how much redundancy do I need? And then how much is this hurting me too? Cause like, I have every battery you could possibly have, my rangefinder, I've got like 3 batteries for, but what I screwed up on last year is I went to recover my elk. I had like a liter and a half, 2 liters of water, and I basically chugged it like right as I finished processing the thing. And it's like, you still have 1.5 miles to get back to your bike. It's 95 degrees out and you have 120 pounds in your back, 100 pounds in your back. Like you're going to die. Like it's not going to go well. Yeah. So I do think it takes having those bad experiences to never have that experience again. You're like, here's the one thing I won't forget. But then you just have another weird experience where you're like, all right, let me modify this. Let me modify that. But to have a capable body and a capable mind to navigate those things versus be terrified or not have that meditation down or not have that physical fitness that you prepared for, I feel like all of those things are kind of backup plans for not having a backup plan. It's like, okay, I'm confident, I'm fit, I know I got a gun on my side, whatever it might be. but man, fascinating. I'm just going to have you back on. I was going to say we could just keep talking, but I'm just going to have you back on in a couple of weeks or months and we'll do this again. I'm actually moving up to Boulder at the end of the month, and I know you're up in Loveland, so we should go shoot like game lines or up in Loveland.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Like that'd be great. Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. Well, CJ, I really appreciate you giving me some of your time today, and this was awesome. It's great getting to know you, and I'm excited to see you out and about.
Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate you reaching out and having me on. CBA is an incredible organization. It's doing a ton for the hunting community here in Colorado. And I just feel blessed to be a part of the podcast.
That's great, man. Well, we'll do two things. One, I want to tell people, join the CBA, $40 a year. You not only get access to this organization that's got your back and is really advocating for archery hunting seasons and rights and all of the things here in Colorado, but you also get 6 issues of our magazine, which you will only get if you're a member. It's a really good magazine. Our editor, Matt Jackson, and Trevin are really doing a great job with it. So I really encourage people, if you've ever hunted or thinking about hunting in Colorado, take $40 and throw it to the CBA. It's a good cause. And I also want people to know where they can find you, CJ, if you want to point them towards your Instagram or if you have a website or anything out there you want people to see.
Yeah. So, I mean, my Instagram handle is just CJ_Sefcovic. Obviously, my last name's a little bit difficult to pronounce, but it's pretty easy to spell. So, yeah, I have an Instagram. Happy to follow there. And then obviously, Mile High Note Game Calls. They've been a huge part of my success in the Elk Woods, and go give them a follow as well.
Awesome, man. Well, I really appreciate it. I will also link to all of that stuff in the show notes so people don't have to write it down. I'm just writing down Mile High Note Game Calls here. And man, great luck this year. I'm so excited to see how this turns out. And hopefully we talk again before the season kicks off in a few months.
Sounds good, Jake. Well, thanks again.
Thanks, CJ.
All right, bye.